The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, a weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for March 18th, 2017. I hope everyone had a great St. Patrick's Day. I know there's a lot of excitement at John Carroll here at WJCU because every year, Greg Priddy and friends run an 18-hour Irish music marathon that is heard all over the world. People email and call in requests, and he just keeps on going. He's like the Energizer Bunny. I don't know how he does it for 18 straight hours. We're going to get on with our show for this week because it's a big one. Let's start with our first guest. A few weeks ago, I helped to moderate a show on Red Kite Prayer's Paceline podcast where we spoke about women in the bicycle business, and I learned about Christine Culver. I really liked what I heard. I wanted to get to know her better, so I invited her to be on the show with me this week. She is currently a board member of the Sonoma County Bicycle Coalition, although she was its executive director for many years. She's so much more, and we're going to talk with her first. Then we'll talk with our newscaster, Devon Griffin. We'll talk about the story that we chose, which is about Team Sky. And then we're going to hop on over to Willoughby, Ohio, which is just a little bit north of where we are right now, and talk with Tim Thompson, who runs the OsteoStrong offices here in Northeast Ohio in the Willoughby Hills area. And he's going to tell us how OsteoStrong works and how it worked for him. He's a former police officer who retired and was unable to walk a lot, did a little bit of OsteoStrong, and ended up walking 15 miles after his second treatment. So that should be pretty interesting. And finally, we're going to hop on a Skype chat with Paolo Casales. He is the producer of the 53-minute documentary, 48 Hairpin Turns at Night. It's the story of a 77-year-old Giuliano Corrale who rides his bicycle without brakes or handlebars. Yep, no brakes, no bars. Giuliano currently holds 12 world records for unusual and what some might say are insane bicycle feats. But this one, riding down the Stelvio at night, has been a burning desire for him for many years. The film is actually more of a study about Giuliano, although the descent down the mountain that will also serve as the 16th stage of the Giro this year is, of course, a big part of the film. So let's head on out to Sonoma County first, and we'll chat with Christine Culver. Hi, Christine. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I learned about you and your work when Patrick Brady and I did our Women in the Bike Business show a few weeks back for the Red Kite Prayer podcast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was fun, and I liked what I heard, so I wanted to know more about you. That's why we're here. So,
well, thank you.
Give us some background, where you grew up, when you got into riding, and I know you have a large stable of bikes. We'll talk about that at some point.
Okay. Well, let's see, my background. I grew up down in Orange County, but I had one of those mothers who refused to drive me everywhere or most anywhere. So most of my travel was by my own legs, so walking or riding my bike, which now I look back on and realize what a blessing that was. So I grew up riding my bike from my friend's house to school to a paper route that I had.
Wow. What kind of bike did you have?
You know, I had various bikes. Most of them were hand-me-downs. I think the one that I grew up learning on was a little Schwinn, and it wasn't the Stingray. It was the girl's model with the banana seat and the monkey bars.
What color was it? You'll remember that.
It was blue.
There you go.
Which has always been my favorite color for bikes.
Interesting, interesting. So you are also a bicycle artist. You make jewelry and cards and stickers and napkin rings and custom items. In fact, you know, before we started talking, you're making some medals for an event this weekend.
Yeah, I started making jewelry probably about, 6 or 7 years ago when I was still the executive director at the Sonoma County Bicycle Coalition. It was just a little side thing I did. And when I decided to retire from that, I did my jewelry business kind of full-time, and I did that for about 4 years before I realized I was not paying the bills well enough and needed to go find something else. But I do pendants and earrings, and I do recycled bracelets made from bike spokes and earrings made from bicycle chain links and fun things like that. And I'm really lucky to get to support one of our great local event series up here. It's called the Grasshopper Adventure Series. And this coming weekend is the Lake Sonoma Mountain Bike Race, which is going to be pretty hard and fun. And I get to participate in it as well as provide the medals for it.
Well, getting outside right now and riding your bike and not freezing to death or being on ice, that's pretty good. We're not in that position.
Lucky.
Yeah, you are.
We're pretty lucky. It's been pouring here for a lot of the time, and I've ridden more in the rain in this past year than in the past 10 years. But this weekend, I think we're going to have a little reprieve, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that's good. One of the things I saw that I really like, which has really nothing to do with bicycles, were the napkin rings that you make.
And they are. They're made for bicycle spokes.
Oh, I knew that. So I guess it does have to do with bicycles. But they don't actually have a bicycle theme when you look at them. They just look really
right.
Cool. I like them. I like them a lot. So I do want to talk about the bikes that you have, because on your website, there's mention of trying to find space in the garage between you and your husband for all the bikes. So
it's a constant battle. It's a constant battle. Well, we both ride, and obviously that's important, because I knew that I needed a mate that understood that bikes would always be taking up a big part of the garage. And problem is that he likes to have his bikes in there too. I don't know. I probably have about 12 bikes right now, and I don't like to get rid of the ones that I have, you know, sentimental attachment to. So I've got a number of my old race bikes still, and then, of course, I've gotten back into cycling pretty heavily again. And you have to have new bikes. So I have the old bikes and the new bikes now.
Do you have a favorite right now?
You know, that's a tough question. You know, I don't have any kids, so I've never had to decide which kid's my favorite. But I guess this is probably as close as I'm going to get. I don't have a favorite. I have three Salsas. One of them is actually hanging up in one of our local pubs downtown, which is really fun. And then I'm riding the other two a lot. My old Salsa road bike, I just got repainted and a whole new kit put on it, so it's updated. And then I've got a little Salsa cross bike, which I'm slowly refurbishing to make it more compatible as an adventure-type gravel grinding bike. And I love both those bikes.
Well, I just want to stop you, because I want to know if your original Salsa is one that Ross Schaefer made.
Of course.
Yes, of
all
course.
Of them are.
Oh, they
yeah.
are. Cool. Very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. So they're all Petaluma made. You know, they mean a lot to me. I got to see Ross this weekend. We do a little bit of motorcycle riding together. So it was fun to get to see him. And he was wearing his Scaboni leathers, which are all in the Salsa colors. And I took a little picture of him, the back of him, and put it up on Facebook. He's not on Facebook, so it's kind of a secret.
I know. I will go back and look because you and I are friends on Facebook. But we actually visited him when we were up there.
Yeah, he's a good soul.
He's a really cool guy. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Christine Culver. She is in California. And I want to talk a little bit about advocacy because it is how you really kind of started the whole Sonoma County Bicycle Coalition. You were the executive director for a long time. And I want to know your thoughts about not just advocacy, but about women and advocacy.
Yeah, I was really lucky to get into it. And I have to just clarify, I didn't start the Bike Coalition or the Sonoma County Bike Coalition. I was the second executive director behind Ted White, who is an amazing soul. But I don't know if there's more women in advocacy or not, but I do know that I've worked with some really fantastic women advocates that were like my mentors, and that would be like Leah Shaham, who ran the San Francisco Bike Coalition, and Deb Hubsmith, who ran the Marin County Bike Coalition, and Safe Routes to School, who unfortunately is no longer with us. So I had a lot of really great women mentors, and it never dawned on me that there may be more women doing this kind of work, but maybe that's the way it is. I'm not sure.
It seems to be that women seem to find advocacy a place they fit in the bicycle business or in the bicycle world.
It's interesting, though.
It is interesting.
The thing that's really interesting about it is that most of our work is done in a very male-populated venue with when going to city council meetings or public works meetings. I mean, often I was the only female at the meeting, which was always really interesting, and you kind of have to pull yourself up to the table and tell yourself you belong there. So there is that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Although when I think about across the country, women I've spoken with over the last 6.5 years, people like Jeanette Sadiq Khan, you know, in New York City, and Barb, I can't remember her name right now, who is the mother of Safe Streets or Complete Streets.
Oh, I'm so bad at this. I know who you're talking about. I'm really bad with names. Everybody knows this.
But I just spoke with her. Oh, Barbara McCann. Barbara McCann. She was with the Department of Transportation. I'm sure she's gone now because all of that has changed. But I see that there have been a lot of women doing really good things in advocacy. So what are the biggest issues that you see in Sonoma County for cycling?
Wow. I think that there's still a pretty strong them versus us, even though most cyclists are also car drivers. But I also think that the press plays that up a lot. And so I think kind of trying to humanize people on bikes is key. And right now, the Sonoma County Bicycle Coalition is working on a safety campaign with our county to kind of, you know, you've got a friend that bikes kind of a theme, you know, your doctor, your librarian, the person that, you know, comes and works in your yard. These are all human beings that you know and you like, and they're also the people sharing the road with you. So they're not just, you know, something out there on your road with quotation marks around it.
Have you had any particularly good successes with the SCBC?
Oh, so many.
Oh, good.
Oh, my gosh. No, we've had a lot of really great successes. One of the ones that they did was a vulnerable road user ordinance, which we were able to get, I think, two of the cities in Sonoma County to pass and the county to pass. And this is actually gives us a little bit of teeth in following through when somebody runs you off the road, you know, and doesn't kill you, because basically if you don't get killed, nothing would happen before.
Right.
So it has yet to be really tested, but there is possibly a case that's coming up right now that I can't talk about that is going to bring this hopefully to the forefront. And I think it's a very good ordinance, and it'll be good if people actually realize that you can't run you can't come that close to people on bikes. You have to be considerate when you're driving. Everybody belongs out there. We all need to take turns. So other things. We have a really great Safe Routes to School program. I don't have the numbers here. I would have to have you talk with our Safe Routes to School person. But it's been super successful. I think we're going on 7 years with it.
And parents are letting their children ride to school?
Yeah, and it's great.
That is great.
We have walking and rolling school buses. And when I was walking to work today, I noticed how many more kind of preteen kids on bikes on their way to school. And it's those kind of things. I mean, it's totally anecdotal right now. But, you know, seeing them out there more where you never, ever used to, it's starting to make a difference.
Do you think that as these youngsters who are beginning to ride their bikes again, and feel safe enough to ride their bikes, and their parents are letting them ride their bikes, are they going to be more inclined to stick with cycling because of, number one, the cost prohibitive nature of cars, and maybe the car culture is changing? Is that possible?
I think that's completely possible. I think it's absolutely possible because they are learning about, you know, being safe out on the road. They're out on the road. Their parents know that they're out on the road. So they're going to be more careful around other people on bikes. And then as these kids, you know, maybe they do become car drivers, which many, you know, of the younger generations are deciding not to get their licenses. But the ones that are have been bike riders in the past and will be more considerate of bike riders. The more people we get out there on the bikes, the safer we all are. That, you know, the more that, it's just that, the more that are out there, we're more visible.
Has there been any change out there in the education portion in schools? So I have this sense that driver's ed should be driver/bike ed.
Absolutely.
Is it happening anywhere? I tend to ask people who have that kind of you know, in with education, and I'm not hearing enough of it yet.
Yeah. You know, I've been kind of out of the loop for the past 5 years. When I left the Bike Coalition, I kind of went cold turkey for a few years before getting back on the board. I know that the California Bike Coalition had been working on updating the California Driver's Handbook to include more questions and information about driving with bikes. So I don't know where that stands.
Okay. What about politics? What are you hearing out there? Infrastructure was a big deal, you know, leading up to the election. It's still being sort of bandied about and nothing's happening.
You know, in Sonoma County, we have a vast number of roads and we get very little of the money back to fix our roads. You know, the federal money.
Right.
So we are a lot considered a self-help county where we do a lot of our own funding. And we, just coming out of this recession, slowly trying to get our roads back into repair and had been doing a really great job. But I have to tell you, I was out there this weekend and even the new roads that have just been rehabbed or rebuilt are beat up. This rain has been really, really tough on our roads this season. As far as funding goes, trying to get federal dollars to, you know, do more. Like we have an overcrossing that we want to go from the school to a neighborhood, to our junior college, to a neighborhood that has a lot of housing. You know, we actually do really well when it comes to competing for that kind of money. Hopefully the new administration will do at least one thing that's, I think, would be great, and that's putting more money into our infrastructure. And our county is, and our cities are very pro-bike, and they understand complete streets and wanting to make the, you know, our roadways safer for people riding bikes. And they also want to get people out of cars. I mean, we have a huge car congestion problem here, and our authorities, our transportation authority is really committed to getting more people out of their cars, transit, walking, biking. So I think that's a good thing.
I think it is, too. The question is, you know, we look at California as being car-centric. And, you know, I don't know enough about Sonoma County to say that, you know, which side of that fence you're really on.
Still car-centric for sure. Absolutely.
Gary Helfrich, who you know, and almost every day he posts a magnificent photograph of his ride into work.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful commute on one of our rails into trails that he takes, and it's very nice.
One of the things I know you do is you actually are a mountain biker.
Yes, I like them all. I like all those bikes.
So are you racing this weekend with this group?
I am.
Are you?
Yeah. It's really fun. I mean, I started racing when I was like 19, and the bikes were so different. And now I've got a new-to-me bike that's full suspension, and it is such a totally different gig. And I took it out for the second time this morning and was like, oh, my gosh, this is so amazing.
What is it?
It's a Turner 5-spot. Dave Turner was one of our old race buddies, so it's kind of nice to get to, you know, ride a friend's bike. So
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of event is this?
It's a cross-country race, pretty much. It's going to be pretty hardcore. It's out at Lake Sonoma, so it's a lot of kind of punchy up and down climbing and then descending. I think it's like 25 miles. But I've been warned that it is a lot harder than I'm going to expect, so I'm heeding that.
Nice. Well, I am going to close our conversation with my usual questions. What's your favorite food?
Oh, my favorite food. Gosh, I'm going to say it. It's donuts. I love
That's awesome. Nobody ever says donuts. That's the best. That's the best.
I love donuts. And so I like a lot of other things, too. I love to eat.
Well, good thing you love to ride, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of music do you usually listen to?
I got a pretty wide variety of music, but you know, music from like my high school years. I love music from the 80s. I love current music, but I'm kind of more of a rock, you know, person, kind of classic rock.
Yeah, see, we're here in Cleveland at the Rock Hall of Fame. Do you have any pets? I already know you have pets, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Yeah, you've seen them because that's all we do is post pictures of our pets. we have two cats. They're brothers, and we call them the Lovey-Dovey brothers because they always curl up together, and they're super sweet. But they're big lunks, stripedy, kind of domestic stripedy house cats without tails or minx cats. And then we've got three dogs, which has kind of been our MO, is to always have two cats and three dogs for some reason. And the current crop is a Jack Russell, and she's about 12. And we have a Belgian Malinois, and she's about 5. And we also call her the Crazy Red Dog. And then we have a Kelpie mix.
Nice. Yes. Nice.
We call her the Ottoman because she is built like an Ottoman.
Yeah, we had a cat we used to say looked like a meatloaf. So, yeah, I understand. Wow, you're the second person in a row I've spoken with who has a Belgian Malinois.
They're insane. Advise your listeners, do not get a crazy red dog. They are German Shepherds on crack.
Zach Paschak, who's the president of Detroit Bikes, has one. And he loves her. He loves her. Well, Christine, thank you so much for talking with me today. That was a lot of fun. And good luck this weekend.
Now, thanks. Come out and visit. We'll take you for a loop.
I would love to do that. That would be awesome. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye. Christine Culver joined me from her home in Sonoma County, going out to race her bike this weekend. We are going to need to take a real quick break. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on the Outspoken Cyclist, and as promised, we are going to talk with our newscaster, our guest for today, Devon Griffin. Devon is in Washington, D.C., getting ready to come back to Northeast Ohio. Hi, Devon. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. You're my first newscaster. I'm really glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you certainly have an interesting CV, as we like to say. You've just done a gazillion things. I think you're going to have some fun with me today. Let's start with our news, and then you and I'll chat a little bit afterwards. How's that?
That sounds great.
Okay, so I'd like to talk about an article that was published in Cycling Tips. It's actually an interview with Paul Kimmage, who many of us know. It discusses Team Sky. I know the article is long, but let's introduce it to our listeners. So take it away.
All right. Well, 7 years ago, Irish journalist Paul Kimmage was offered the opportunity to be embedded with Team Sky. It was the first year of the British team's existence, and transparency was, it said, high among its principles. That offer was ultimately nixed by Bradley Wiggins, who went on to win the Tour de France 2 years later and is now under scrutiny. Wiggins and the team's management have faced questions over the use of therapeutic use exemptions for powerful corticosteroids and also about the delivery of a mysterious package hand-delivered from the UK to France in June 2011. In recent days, it has also emerged that former Team Sky doctor Richard Freeman was blocked by another team medic, Alan Farrell, in trying to obtain a fourth TUE for Wiggins, and that a box of testosterone patches was sent to him at team headquarters in Manchester in what has been called a mistaken delivery. Kimmage has been for years one of Team Sky's strongest critics over what he said was a lack of true transparency. In a characteristically frank interview, he spoke with Cycling Tips about the team's controversy, corticosteroids, testosterone, Wiggins' metamorphosis into a Grand Tour winner, team doctors Freeman and Farrell, and more.
So what did you come away with in reading that whole article? I know you and I both read the whole thing, and it's a long interview with Paul Kimmage. What did you come away with? I mean, it's been a controversy for a while now.
Well, kind of a couple of things. I mean, Kimmage's emphasis through his reporting career really has been on doping and trying to ferret that out. So, you know, initially you look at it and you say it's kind of like driving down the freeway and you see a cop, and even though you're going the speed limit, your heart rate goes up and you get cold and sweaty because, you know, you're afraid of what the cop might do. So, you know, there's that initially, but as you read the whole thing and kind of see the transition of Wiggins from, you know, not very impressive to pretty impressive, and then these use exemptions, they start showing up at funky times, and no one knew about the testosterone, and all of a sudden, you know, it looks like Team Sky has something to hide, and you start to transition wanting to support them because of their stated goals to really having some skepticism, in spite of the fact I'm not entirely sure there's anything that would really strip Wiggins of one of his titles. So, you know, you start to question the foundational goals that they advertised loudly when they were organized.
Well, while it doesn't seem like it's another Armstrong kind of cover-up and denial, it doesn't feel real kosher to me either. So I'm really not sure where it's going to go. TUEs are one thing, but as my husband says, no athlete needs testosterone, you know, extra testosterone.
Right, and the TUEs seem to show up just before major races, which, is also a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, therapeutic use exemptions, for those who don't know what that is. Well, that article is by Shane Stokes. It is in the March 8th issue of CyclingTips.com. An interview with Paul Kimmage, Team Sky's charade has been exposed. So, thank you. That is really cool. Did you have fun doing that?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, tell us a little bit about Devon Griffin. I know you live in Medina, which is not too far from Cleveland, and that you work for NASA. But other than that, tell our listeners a little bit more about you, because you ride a hell of a lot of miles.
Well, so, after my kids all graduated from high school, moved out of the house, I ended up deciding that I was going to start commuting by bike. That was really a goal when we moved to Cleveland, but we didn't get really close, but I live about 23 miles from work, and unless the weather is lightning, I generally ride my bike to work and back every day. So I do a lot of that. My wife has chickens that she lets run around the yard, and we do an organic garden. So we try and stay busy.
How many chickens do you have?
Well, right now she has about 15 laying hens. I'm actually in the process of building her a chicken wagon based on a hay wagon. So we have 4.5 acres and drag it around the yard, and they can get more bugs and more weeds and all of that. And I've got another 11 that are chicks that are probably about 4 months old or 4 weeks old in the brooder.
Oh, I would love to have chickens. I think my dogs would love to have chickens too, but for a whole different reason, right?
So, we have trained our dogs to not bug the chickens, and in fact, they kind of keep predators away.
Yeah, you know what? I would imagine we could train our dogs too, given a little bit of time. But we live like really in the city, so there's no way we're going to have chickens. I don't think we're allowed to have roosters. I think we're allowed to have hens, but I don't think we're going to go there. So, what kind of bike do you ride back and forth to work?
Well, there are actually three, and none of them are very fancy at all. I mean, a Specialized Sector with the Apex group set on it is my quote-unquote fancy bike. It's just an aluminum frame with a carbon fork. And then I have a Cannondale Synapse, also aluminum, that I throw some fenders on for the days when it's raining, because I just don't, you know, that bike has a 105 group set, and you know, it's a little bit cheaper to replace stuff on it if it goes wrong. And then if it's really, really nasty, I have a Cannondale old touring one that I put some Schwalbe winter marathons on that are studded, and so I can make it over snow and ice. But with that one, the tires are so heavy I can't ride all the way from home, so I do a mixed mode commute. I drive up to Valley Parkway, so people in the Cleveland area know where that is, and I only ride 14 miles on those days, and then in 14 miles back.
Well, it's really nice to get to know you. You are in our area, and maybe you'll be a newscaster for me again.
I would love it.
Well, have a safe trip back from Washington, D.C. I know that's where you are right now, and you're coming home today. And we'll talk again.
All right. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was fun, having somebody I haven't met, I haven't seen, actually participate in the show as a newscaster. I really enjoyed it. You too can be a guest newscaster. All you need to do is send me a message on Facebook or an email at outspokencyclist@gmail.com and say, hey, I want to do what Devon did last week. And I'll get back to you and we'll pick a story and you can do what Devon did. We need to take a real quick break. We'll be right back and then we'll head on out to Willoughby Hills, Ohio to talk with Tim Thompson from OsteoStrong. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Good afternoon, Tim. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to be on.
Well, several of my friends and students have been coming to your OsteoStrong office in Willoughby, Ohio, and they're telling me about your work. First, could you explain what OsteoStrong means and what it does?
Well, quite simply, it simply means stronger bones, which is what we do here. We help people reverse the effects of osteoporosis. We help people with joint and back issues, type 2 diabetes, gain strength, and improve their balance.
So you can actually reverse osteoporosis, and that happens with the process that you do. Tell us a little bit about the process itself, how OsteoStrong works.
Well, everything we do here is based on about a 100-year-old medical study by Dr. Julius Wolf, which deals with axial bone loading. With the equipment that we have here, we merely tap the body's natural adaptive responses to increase bone density. So by natural adaptive response, it's like when you walk out of a dark room into a light room, your pupils react, or if you get hot, you begin to sweat.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I've looked at both your website and some of the links that you sent me. So this method that you're using, a gentleman by the name of, I guess it's Dr. Jaquish?
Yes.
So his mom had osteoporosis, and he decided to do something you're calling osteogenesis. So can you tell us how it works? I know that it's a machine or a series of machines that you use.
What happened with Dr. Jaquish is his mother was diagnosed with severe osteoporosis in her early 60s. He was fearful that, you know, she would suffer a break or a fracture, particularly in her hip region, which can be, can be fatal in some of the older demographics. So he came up, he started studying Dr. Julius Wolf's Wolf's Law, is what it's called, with the axial bone loading. He devised the biodensity machine, and the biodensity machine looks like a piece of Nautilus equipment with a computer hooked to it, and that is what the client utilizes to perform the axial bone loading sessions. Actually, the machine does nothing to you. You do everything to yourself. The machine is merely a vehicle for you to do that with. So we use the biodensity machine in conjunction with some vibration plate therapy prior to and following your biodensity session.
So the whole thing, you walk in the door, and how long are you there?
15 minutes is a normal session for a client, and that includes a nice 6-minute hydro massage before you leave.
So it really doesn't take a lot of time, and from what I've been able to sort of discern looking at everything, more time doesn't make it go any better or any faster.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
And then you only need to do the sessions once a week. Doing it more than once a week will actually slow your progress.
So what happens in between sessions? So let's say I come in and I do my session and then have my little hydro massage, and then I go home for the next 6 days. What's going on in my body in that time?
Well, your body uses that time to up the osteoblast production, and the osteoblasts are the cells within the bone that generate new bone. Osteoporosis is merely that. It's a drop in your osteoblast production. So your body is regenerating new bone. It is making the tendons and ligaments around your joints stronger. We multiply the myofibril cells or myofibrils within the muscle cells, and we don't make your muscles bigger. We make them more dense, which is where you gain the strength.
Are the weekly sessions cumulative? So if I come in every week for 6 weeks, am I going to stay stronger over those 6 weeks, or are things going to remain the same? So I had stem cell therapy about a year and a half ago. The stem cells at some point stop growing because that's, you know, their life. But will this continue to work, or do you have to keep coming all the time, like every week?
It will continue to work. Doing it weekly is how you continue to gain the strength, gain bone density. We've had clients that have come in with like a 158-year-old male had a negative 2.5 T score for his bone density, which puts him right on the cusp of osteoporosis and osteopenia. He had great results in a year. His next DEXA scan, which is a scan for the density of the bone, showed his T-score now being a negative 0.001, which puts him at a healthy bone stage. He would have the bone density of approximately a 30-year-old male. So continuing to do it, you know, until you reverse the effects of the osteoporosis is optimal. Once you have achieved reversing those effects, you can go into like a maintenance schedule where you come in every other week or once a week just to maintain that.
During the time that you're going through this, you can still engage in your regular activities, I take it?
Yes, absolutely. I encourage my clients to keep moving. You know, the body's designed to be in motion, to move. With my joint and back pain clients, you know, a lot of them come in, they've been largely sedate because for them to get up and move around, you know, it's painful for them. So their body actually reacts very well to what we do here. Their strength gains come quickly and in large percentages just by getting that body moving again.
How many OsteoStrong offices are throughout the country? Do you have any idea of what the number of franchises are right now or is?
Currently, I believe we are at 40 in the United States. We are forecast to open 11 new centers here in the first quarter of the year, with centers going in Europe and Spain this year. We're going international. And Tony Robbins, motivational speaker.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he is now part owner of OsteoStrong. He is a big believer in the system. He has 5 of the biodensity machines himself, one in each one of his homes, and he is opening 2 centers in Florida this year.
Why not, right?
Exactly.
So what's your background? How did you get into it? What sort of tipped the scale in favor of you saying, yeah, I want to get into this?
Well, I was a police officer for 27 years. Had 4 knee surgeries and major back surgery towards the end of my career. I've got about a foot of titanium in my lower back. I had lower back fusion. And my last knee surgery in 2014, they were literally pulling pieces of my femur out. I'm all bone on bone in my right knee. Was to the point where I limped constantly. My orthopedic surgeon told me that had I been 10 years older, he wouldn't have bothered with the clean out. He'd have closed everything up and scheduled me for knee replacement. Ultimately, what ended up happening, they didn't want to do knee replacement in me as young as I was, because as my surgeon put it, you're not bright enough to take it easy. You'll feel great. He said, you know, with what you do for a living, what you do outside of work, he says, you know, you're going to burn that knee up in 5 or 6 years. He said, do you get 2 knee replacements in your lifetime? He says, and, you know, I'd rather put this off as long as possible. So ultimately, I ended up retiring. A friend of mine, Bill Atterbury, who is one of the center owners, sent me out to one of the other Chardon osteo locations in Chardon and wanted me to go and check it out. I was, quote unquote, the guinea pig for he and his business partner, Dennis Durkin. So I went out there, became a client. And I remember the first session I went through, I came out, came to my truck, I called Bill, and I said, you know what, Bill, I think this is a snake oil sale. I said, I don't believe that this is going to work. I can't believe that 15 minutes is going to affect me in any way, shape, or form. So at Bill's prompting, I stayed on for a month. When I retired, walking for me was like chewing on a busted tooth. I limped constantly. A month later, my girlfriend and I go to Niagara Falls, park the truck, get out, and hand to God, if I didn't walk 15 miles that day, I didn't walk a foot. I started limping the last hour and a half, whereas prior to getting involved with OsteoStrong, I would have limped the moment my feet hit the ground. So the difference it made in me in just a month was incredible. And that's what sold me on it. When I called Bill and told him my results, he said that they were going to go ahead and invest in a franchise, and he said, yeah, and I need somebody to run it. So here I sit.
So no more policing for you.
No, I think 27 years was enough. And I, like you say, took a toll on me, beat my body up a bit. So it was time.
Is the franchise busy?
Yeah, we're actually doing very well here in Willoughby. I love working with my clients. You know, we kind of turn this into a family or a community atmosphere. I truly enjoy what it is that I do here.
Well, I'm going to come out and visit you and take a look at the facility and report back on my own. But I really appreciate you talking with me about OsteoStrong today. Tell us how my listeners can find out about your franchise and about the company itself.
Well, our website is OsteoStrongNEO, as in Northeast Ohio, .me. That's our website. They can learn about us there, or they can call us at 440-516-1119. We offer the first 2 sessions for free, because trying to explain osteogenic loading and osteogenesis in a conversation is like trying to nail Jell-O to a wall. It's difficult at best. So we find that with the 2 free sessions, having people come in, see it, and try it, that seems to be the best way for people to experience this. So I would love to have you come in. I'd love to show you the center and show you how we can help.
Well, I appreciate you asking and offering, and I will take advantage of it and then be able to report back to my listeners. We did do something when I had my stem cell therapy with the physician who did that, and that was a very successful thing, too. I'm looking for more successful things as I get older. I think most of my listeners would agree. So I appreciate you talking with me about it today, and continued good luck with the franchise.
Thank you very much, and it was a pleasure talking with you, and you have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tim Thompson from OsteoStrong in Northeast Ohio talked with us about his work with osteoporosis and balance and strength and flexibility. If you look at the website, if that's if it's of interest to you, osteostrongneo.me, it does give lots of explanation. There are videos. There is evidently a lot of scientific proof that things are working. I do have, as I said, clients and students who both have tried it and like it and seem to be getting results. So what the heck? We're going to take a real quick break. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights.
Hello, thank you for joining me on The Outspoken Cyclist this week.
Thanks to you. Thanks, everybody. Hello.
Hello. So how's Italy today?
Yeah, it's a good day with the sun. It's like Italy should be always. Yeah, it's good today.
Yeah, we actually have sun today, although we had these horrible, horrible winds yesterday.
No, it's a good day.
So I want to talk about your movie. I've got this insane trailer to watch, and I'm like, who would do such a thing? So first of all, tell us a little bit about you and your work as a movie producer and the author of the film, 48. I hope I say this correctly, Tornanti di Notte.
Yes, great. Great. Oh. Italian.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I work with a small production house here in northwest Italy. It's called the Staff Film. We made most of all documentaries about, I would say, any kind of issues. But since I'm a cycling fan, I love this story, and I wanted to produce this movie. So one day, two guys, Fabrizio and Anna, his wife, came to me with this story. And I told them, this is one of the stories I would like to shoot myself. So since the idea is yours, I want to produce this movie. So this is how everything started in 2014.
So did you know about Giuliano Corrale before this?
Yes. The strange thing is that as I told you, I'm a cycling fan. So when I was young, I used to watch. I don't know, Greg LeMond and Claudio Chiappucci and Laurent Fignon, so all the cycling stars of the 80s and 90s. And I remember when I was a child that sometimes the live from the Tour de France or the Giro d'Italia, they decided to stop the live because they had to had to transmit a new record set by this strange man, Giuliano Calore. So it was very popular in the 80s. At the time, Giuliano was he was 50 years old. And he did this strange kind of Guinness World Records, going up and down the biggest mountain passes in Italy with a bike without handlebar and brakes. And I remember this since I was a child. Then, of course, he decided to gradually stop this kind of activities. Today he is 68 years old. I still remember this name. So when I knew about this this story, I wanted absolutely to make this film and to produce this film.
Before we actually talk about him, describe the Stelvio.
The Stelvio is one of the legendary passes in Italy. It is a big mountain. I think it's one of the. It is, of course, in the top five of the highest mountain passes. The height is about 2,700 meters. And it is also a legendary pass for cycling because many times the Giro d'Italia has been decided on the top of the Stelvio. So there is a very long climb from Prata lo Stelvio to the top of the Stelvio Pass. And what is very particular of this climb, it is that it's made of 48 hairpins. So it is not only difficult to climb, but it's also very beautiful from a scenic point of view, because from the top of the Stelvio, you can see all of these climbs. So it is like a long snake coming down the valley. So it is a fantastic place for the spectators to see the Giro d'Italia, because they start to see the riders from half an hour before they pass in front of them. So this is an iconic mountain for the Giro d'Italia, and this year, that is the 100th anniversary of the Giro d'Italia, they will pass again on the top of the Stelvio, so to celebrate this story. Many times the Stelvio has decided the Giro, sometimes because of the difficulty of the climb, sometimes because of the weather condition. You know that the Giro d'Italia, it's at the end of May, so sometimes it is full of snow at the top of the Stelvio, so very hard condition to climb and to be on a bike.
Yes, it's going to be stage 16 this year, from what I am finding out.
Yeah, they will make the same descent we have filmed in the film, but the only difference is that the pros, they will have the handlebars.
Yeah, no kidding, and brakes.
Yeah.
So Giuliano Carali is a very interesting study, and a lot of the film, now it's a 53-minute documentary, a lot of the film is about him and how he prepares for these kinds of events and how important it is for him to hold these records. I noticed that his bike says 12 world records. Was this descent the 13th?
Yeah, it may be. To be honest, he decided not to register the record. So it is a very long process. You have to call the Guinness World Record and tell them we will do this and this. So it's not so easy. So Giuliano was really tense and nervous. We, on our side, we had to think about the film. So at the end, we decided not to call the Book of Records, the Guinness World Records judges, and just to film the descent. Anyway, it could be his 13th record, yes.
Okay, well, that's not as important as the way the film highlights him. You actually did a lot of psychological kind of introspection into Giuliano, and his ex-wife was in the film. His son showed up at the event. Do you know how he came to ride without handlebars and brakes? His balance is just incredible.
Yeah, we decided to make a film not only about cycling, but we wanted to make a film that everybody could watch. So we have the. I have been lucky because Fabrizio, the director, is not a cycling fan, so he knows nothing about cycling, and this I think gives a good perspective to the film itself, because he has a distant approach, and we have decided to first of all to investigate, as you said, the psychological aspects, and only at the end to investigate the technical aspects of cycling. Giuliano started to remove his handlebars because people didn't believe in him. When he was young, almost by chance, he started to go on his bike without hands. So he used to go up the Stelvio without hands, and he also used to do good times. One time he made a better time than Bernardino record of the in the ascent of the Stelvio, and that year Bernardino won the Giro d'Italia. So he was a good rider, but he wanted to do this. He liked to do strange things, to do, as he says, unique things. He was not interested in competing. He was not interested in winning stages or competitions. But his only interest was to have people saying to him, "You are the unique. You are the best. The only one who can do things like this." So, to avoid any kind of misunderstandings, he decided one day to remove the handlebars, so nobody could say to him, "You are cheating, and you are not doing what you're telling."
One of the best scenes, I think, in the movie, one of the most interesting scenes in the movie, is watching him with his eyes closed, obviously managing to go down the Stelvio in his mind, you know, making those hairpin turns.
Yeah.
So imagining, I know a lot of athletes do this, where they imagine where they're going and what it's going to look like, shaping the descent. But it is still terrifying to watch him at the top of that mountain in the dark, hoping for a full moon and a little lamp. And he takes off down this, you know, 2,800 feet of hairpin turns. It's insane.
Yeah, it's quite insane. That evening, I was in front of him. I was driving the car, and it was really something strange. It was something terrifying. I tried to think to something else because I was scared for him, because that day there was a lot of wind, and it was dark. So he had just a small light in his hand, and with this light, he had to enlight everything. So the road in front of him, because the stadio has a lot of potholes in the asphalt, but also he had to enlight all the hairpins because our car was far, so he could not see us. Only sometimes we decided to approach him to shoot some images, but then we moved away. So it was really something, yeah, something incredible, terrifying, even because just one day before he had a sort of try, and he fell down on the ground just at the beginning, just at the start. So it is not something easy, and is not something so safe. Also consider that Giuliano now is 68 years old. So
in the film it says he's 77.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I made a mistake. Yeah, 77, yeah.
It's crazy. So the film, when you and I are talking, it is Thursday, March 9th, and it opens tonight at the, is it the Piemonte Film Festival in Turin?
Yes, it's in Turin this evening, in a big theater this evening in Turin, yeah.
So are there other films going to be screened tonight?
Yeah, this is a festival. The good thing is that it's not a festival for sport movies, and we like this kind of thing because it means that our documentary can also go outside the niche of cycling. So this was our purpose, and we appreciate the fact that today we compete with films about any kind of issues.
Well, it's certainly a fascinating film. I was just riveted to the screen, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to watch it. When will it be in general release? When will my listeners be able to actually see, other than the trailer?
From tomorrow morning. From now, yeah, the film will be available in streaming and download on our website, on Amazon, and many other platforms. So
we will add that link to our sites, and I wish you a lot of luck with the film. It is a riveting film. It is Giuliano Corrale, 48 hairpin bends at night, and I mean, it is grip your seat and, you know, like chew on your fingers. So, well, enjoy yourself tonight, Paolo. Thank you so much for talking with me today, and I wish you a lot of luck with the film.
Thanks to you. Thanks
all
so
right.
much. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Paolo Casalis joined us from Italy, talking about the film 48 Hairpin Turns at Night. It was a fascinating film. If you're interested, I would highly recommend it. I'd also like to thank our guest newscaster, Devon Griffin. I'd like to thank Christine Culver and wish her good luck in her race this weekend. And Tim Thompson from OsteoStrong. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. It was jam-packed, wasn't it? I hope you come back next week. We'll have another great show for you. Remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.